I don't know how big to make that variable, like what that equates to as far as how much that's going to remove from the deficit, how much that's going to remove from the bond auctions, how much that's going to bring the yields down. If nothing else, he picked a couple sharp guys. He has a tremendous amount of cerebral credibility.
What an amazing new phrase you just made up there, cerebral credibility. I love that. I've never heard that phrase before, but this is a really fancy way of saying he's smart.
Right, he's a lot of cerebral credibility. So, $87 million a month on the study of the sex life of the African tsetse fly. Well, maybe we don't need to do that. Maybe we need to go to the inner cities of Chicago and Houston and Detroit and New York and wherever and give those kids a better education in school lunches. I mean, it came out of nowhere, but so did Space Force. Space Force is cool. Like, if I was 5 years old right now, I'm like, I'm joining the Space Force.
All right. Welcome back at long last. We meet again, the Intelligent Investment Show with Garrett Lell and Matt Dahl. I'm telling you, man, I don't mean to be weird about it, but I really have kind of missed you a little bit. Was it in 3 weeks now? 4 weeks? 3 or 4 weeks?
I think it was 4 weeks because we had 2 weeks. Then we skipped that Friday. Yeah. You know, and it was, I just kind of sat in the dark.
Yeah. I know it's tough without me. I thought about texting you a little bit just so you wouldn't miss me too bad. You said you were busy racing. You know, I didn't want to be a distraction while you were away racing. You know, I didn't want you to lose on my account.
Yeah, we didn't need any help losing. We did a great job of that all by ourselves.
Yeah, we talked yesterday. Our pre-production call was mostly a recap of how your race was. So this was, you were trying out the new car. Was this a new car or a rebuild? Like, had you just been making some repairs on it?
No, it's a new-ish car. We've only had it out for a few races. It's actually my brother's car. We're trying a new system out in this new car, which this car has only ever had this system in it, but it's new to us. And it's not really cooperating like we had hoped. So we're going to take the new car and go back to an old tried and true system we know is going to be fast and reliable and all those other things.
I gotcha. Well, so let's see. We talked last time just before, our last show would have been a couple of weeks before the election. Kind of we're at a nice high point in the market. The market seemed to be baking in a Trump win in the election by about on the day we recorded last, I think the betting number was around 60-40. He ends up getting 60% of the electoral votes, ironically enough, I suppose. You said you thought that the market would kind of maybe consolidate just a little bit and maybe, you know, not necessarily continue to run as after the election. And that's pretty much exactly the way it played out. We got a little bit of a dip into the election, and then it actually did spike a little bit post-election. So you were right. Your timing was like a day or two off. The market seemed to go ahead and sell off ahead of the election and get that out of the way. And then after it was all said and done, seemed to rally back. So is that the way you saw it?
Yeah, there was a lot of buy the rumor, sell the news, right? And there was a lot of people that had priced in the Trump win. And, you know, what are they going to do, right? The day before, they've made a lot of money. They take profits. Trump wins the election. They go right back in. We have a 2% day on the S&P the next day. I mean, more than 2%. We had 146-point S&P day. We had a 1,500-point Dow day. We had, almost 600-point NASDAQ day. You know, we've seen the bond market. You know, we talked about this before. The bond market has been stickier than we kind of thought. I thought we'd be in the low threes by the end of this year. However, the sort of the caveat to that was Trump. And if Trump wins, and is the bond market pricing in a Trump win? Okay. And, you know, we started thinking, you know, sometime around March, April of this year, that the bond market's starting to sniff out, you know, a likely Trump presidency. And yields, although inflation has cooled significantly, yields have not followed suit all that much. So they're down, don't get me wrong, but they haven't correlated like they should have. And I think that, you know, and we've discussed before, but I think the market was going back to its muscle memory from 2016.
Yeah.
You know, we were there. I think you were an advisor back in those days. And if you remember, the bond market got absolutely obliterated from election basically through inauguration, right? It just got absolutely taken out to the woodshed and beat like it wasn't listening. So, you know, the bond market's not going to get caught off sides this year. And it didn't. So we've actually seen the S&P or the yields in the last 60 days go up 90 basis points. We were looking at 362 on the 10-year on September 16th. You know, we're looking at basically, it's at 440 now, but it had been, you know, nearly 450. I think the bond market is oversold. Okay. And I was doing some reading this morning, and it does appear to be what they call, as far as yields are concerned, and then maybe even the dollar, a bit of a local top. Okay. That means it's likely going to roll over, but it's not going to roll over in a long-term material way, if that makes sense. So I don't think we're going to see a two handle on the 10-year for quite some time. Okay. I think we're going to live sort of in this range, depending on what happens economically, depending on what happens with inflation numbers, depending what happens on the fiscal spending side. Okay. Probably going to live in this 350 to 450 range. I know that's kind of a big delta, but that's kind of what we're thinking, right? And, you know, with Trump, we're going to have, you know, less regulation. We're going to have lower corporate taxes. Initially, we're going to have lower receipts to the Treasury because of the lower taxes. And there's going to be, you know, some deficits. There's going to be deficits now, higher than what they expected, and which is a big reason for the higher yield. So with deficits, you know, there's no such thing as printing money. That doesn't exist. I know it's a very commonly used phrase, or printing money, they're not printing money. Okay. What they're doing is they're selling bonds at the bond auctions to cover the deficits. And the more bonds they are trying to sell to cover the larger deficits, the higher the yield that has to be offered to cover those deficits to attract more buyers, right? So that's what's going to take place. So there's probably going to be a larger treasury auctions to cover the larger deficits initially until the economic theory comes to pass, where the lower taxes, the more economic growth will then lead to the more treasuries. Now that, again, there's another caveat with Trump, because he's tricky. Is he has this new department that's got the Department of Government Efficiency, the DOGE department with Elon and Vivek Ramaswamy, right? These two guys. And these two guys are very, very bright guys. Both of them incredibly bright guys. Okay. And I really think they're going to do a good job. So that's sort of one of those variables. I don't know how big to make that variable. Like, how is that spending times, now it's 0.9, or is it spending times 0.93, or is it spending times 0.84, or is it spending times 0.6? I mean, I don't know what that number is. And then what that equates to as far as how much that's going to remove from the deficit, how much that's going to remove from the bond auctions, how much that's going to bring the yields down. Okay. All of those things are very, very, very much up in the air. But, you know, if nothing else, he picked a couple sharp guys.
Yeah. I have a couple of different things, or a couple of different questions. I don't know which one to go first. I think I want to go with that first, though. Is there an Elon Musk factor somewhere to come into play here? I mean, honestly, I don't think I've ever. You could have convinced me. I you know how closely I follow politics. So from my very distant view looking in, you could have convinced me that Elon Musk was his running mate. I saw them side by side, hip to hip, so many times over these last couple of months. I don't remember seeing a business figure that closely linked to a presidential candidate. Was that solely, you think, just to get him elected? Or do you think what's Elon's role going to be in this moving forward? And is there a factor there? And you got one of the entrepreneur of our generation that is that closely tied to the president. I mean, what does that mean for the economy? And is there a factor to take into account?
Well, I think the close relationship that developed with Elon Musk had multiple factors and reasons behind it. Okay. One, he's incredibly popular. Okay. He runs a very successful company. He is the richest human being on planet Earth. Okay. He has a tremendous amount of cerebral credibility. Okay. He's a smart guy. He's a genius. Okay. No one doubts that. Okay. Everything he touches turns to gold.
What an amazing new phrase you just made up there, cerebral credibility. I love that. I've never heard that phrase before, but this is a really fancy way of saying he's smart.
Right, he has a lot of cerebral credibility. So, therefore, I'm trying to bring some cerebral credibility to myself.
I love it. That was the most long-winded way to say smart I've ever heard.
So, Donald Trump has a tremendous, you know, he's hoping to get some of that overflow, right? Well, I'm partnering with Elon Musk. He's a smart guy. I'm a smart guy. We are smart guys. We're going to do smart guy things. Okay. So I think there was a lot of that. I think there's a lot of this millennial Gen Z. We like electric cars. We are going to not repudiate the Gen Xers and buy, but they want to carve out their own place in the history books. And Elon Musk is their Pied Piper. Okay. He is their Pied Piper. So if you look at how Trump performed as far as the different demographic groups, he did really, really well in that, you know, kind of 18 to 34 year old cohort. He did really well with minorities compared to other Republican candidates. He took a tremendous amount of votes away from the other side in those specific sectors. And I don't know how much Elon had to do with that, but you could bet it was a material amount. Had he not had Elon in his corner, would he have won? Likely, yeah. Would the margins have been as large? No. You know, and I think you got to give credit to Trump in that he kind of knew he needed a connector to that generation and that world and the electric cars, because he already owns the, you know, the blue collar guys with the trucks and the guns and the big gas burning everything, right? That's his. Okay. Yeah. And that's his base, and they're not going anywhere. He needed to connect with another group for the same reasons, because it's good for them too, right? And they can all coexist under the same umbrella and kind of do their thing. And that's what it was. And that's why I think he did that, right? And honestly, it was effective because, you know, back to the poly markets, the Real Clear Politics, it nailed it. It wasn't close, and it didn't look like it was going to be close. It looked like it was going to be close in the beginning of October, and then Trump just kind of ran away with it. You know, now don't get me wrong, this is turning into a political show all of a sudden. Don't get me wrong, Kamala really stepped on her own foot with a few of her interviews. She said she couldn't have said a worse thing than she said. You know, as far as nothing comes to mind. All of those things. I don't think it was one thing. I think it was a house of cards that blew over. You know, I mean, it all started actually with Biden announcing he was going to run, because that was a weak candidate from the get-go, but he was also the sitting president. So it put a fundamental material headwind in for the Democrats. They had to overcome that, hoping that Biden could overcome it himself. When he was unable to overcome it, and it was very clear he was not a strong candidate via the debate, okay, the first debate they had in the end of June, you know, obviously they had to do what they had to do, and it was agreed upon that he had to be replaced. And, you know, you just don't start, you don't have a lot of time for people to get to know you. And amongst other reasons, she probably wasn't the best candidate, but she was the closest candidate.
Yeah, I don't want to turn it into a political show either, but am I that unplugged and disconnected from society that I realized what a brilliant idea it was for him to hitch Trump to hitch himself to Musk from a political capital standpoint to help his electability. I did not see this coming with him being in charge of the Department of Government Efficiency. Well, is what you said. I mean, you're right. He's inventing new departments, but that sounds pretty cool. Like, a Department of Government Efficiency seems like something that is perfect to appoint somebody like Elon Musk for. So was I completely blindsided? Did everybody else know about this, or is this just coming out of nowhere for everybody else? And does it mean anything to the markets?
I mean, it came out of nowhere, but so did Space Force. Well, Space Force is cool. Like, if I was 5 years old right now, I'm like, I'm joining the Space Force.
So does it mean anything, though? Like,
I'd wear a little blonde, like, fluffy wig, and I would go join the Space Force. Now, the Department of Government Efficiency, what market implications? Well, in theory, it will have market implications, because it will lower government spending. It should, over time, to some extent, lower longer term rates, lower interest rates, which should then provide less competition to the equity side, and should be good for, you know, a strong multiple expansion. And of course, if there's surplus dollars in the government, they can spend it. You know, they can maybe cut taxes, and people have more money of their own to spend which could be good for the economy. So in theory, yes, but it's a Candyland sort of pathway to get there.
It sort of sounds like, I mean, we've historically had, you know, presidents have had chief economic advisors, okay? Chief economic advisor, by definition, sounds like that is the chief of all advisors when it comes to economics to the president. But when you tell me you're the director of government efficiency, it almost kind of sounds like you just hired Elon Musk to be the United States CEO, right? Donald Trump may be the president, but in terms of the business of the United States, director of government efficiency kind of sounds like Elon Musk just has been appointed to be the CEO of American business. If that's a real thing, that's pretty freaking cool. It could also just be a completely honorary BS title that's just something cool to get headlines, you know? So that's why I'm kind of wondering, does it even matter? Because if it does matter, I mean, that's, it's a cool thing to invent out of nowhere, but it's also, you can't really pick somebody that I would rather be the CEO of American business than Elon Musk. He's done pretty well with the other businesses that he's ran.
Well, from what I read about this Department of Government Efficiency, its whole purpose is to go into the different bureaucracies and shrink them, make them more efficient. They're massively bloated, massively expensive. Ramaswamy, he referred to them, this bureaucracy, as the fourth branch of government and by far the most powerful branch of government, okay? And that's what they're trying to remove. They're trying to remove this bloated bureaucratic state, okay, which is highly, highly expensive, right? And you know, you're talking about, again, two very smart, articulate guys who have a mandate from a very powerful president, you know what I mean? So I kind of feel like this isn't bluster, this isn't talk. These two guys are going to get it done. I really believe that. You know, I'm not pro or con one way or the other. It's just, it feels like they're going to get it. And you know what? Maybe there is. I'm sure there was something I read that they're actually going to have a website that shows the most insane things the government spends money on. And they're going to start with the most insane things and work their way down. Wow. Literally. So, you know, like, I mean, if we're spending $87 million a month on the study of the sex life of the African tsetse fly, well, maybe we don't need to do that. Maybe we need to go to the inner cities of Chicago and Houston and Detroit and New York and wherever and give those kids a better education and school lunches, yeah. Right? Maybe we can spend money doing that. Maybe we can figure out a better way to spend those dollars. Maybe help out our veterans more, right? Yeah. Maybe help out older people that aren't veterans. You know, maybe give a little more money to Social Security so those people have a little bit more money in their pocket to spend, which would be good for the economy, right? So I think that's what this is about. It's about taking just that stupid amount of money we spend on stupid things for who knows whatever reason and redirect those dollars to something that is far more important.
Yeah, and it's one of these things that I was thinking about this the other day or telling somebody. If you put me in a room with 100 people and made me really be honest about my political views, I think I could come out with 150 new enemies because my political views are so – they're not even centric. They're just against both sides so much that they balance out somewhere neutrally. But the conservative views are to be against – government spending, and mainstream kind of sees the liberal views as being all for government spending. And I think a lot of times somewhere in the middle of that is that a lot of people don't have a problem with government spending and government coming in and helping out. It's being efficient with that spending and being able to actually do productive things with it rather than just, you know, you said it's not printing money, but people kind of see it sometimes as burning money. And if you had people in charge in the government who are intelligent with business that can actually run efficient government programs, that could be interesting for the economy. But anyway, I just got completely derailed there. My ADD kicked in big time when I heard Department of Government Efficiency. I thought that is so cool. I've got to ask a lot of questions on that. So my bad there for derailing you. But the market, one thing I was interested in, the bond market and the equity markets kind of reacted a little bit differently heading into the election. So if you look at the 10-year Treasury since our last show on October 25th, it's been kind of in a steady climb in terms of yield.
Yeah, it would have been about 4.2% on that day.
On that day, and about 4.45 right now. So it's been steadily climbing, you know, pretty simple looking little chart there. The equity side very much different. I mean, it was basically our last show was practically the top. I think the following Monday it was a little higher, or Tuesday was a little higher, and then it started to go ahead and sell off just a little bit, nothing crazy. And then on the 4th or the 5th, it starts a huge rally for 2 or 3 days, and then it's just kind of leveled off since then. So was it just a matter of, like we've talked about before, the bond market's maybe a little bit more sophisticated and a little bit more intelligent, and it's not the day traders from Robinhood that are just swinging it back and forth. These are legit traders. Or is there some data point that caused there to be less of a correlation there for those few days around the election? Because the equity markets definitely kind of stand out. You've got like this gigantic bubble on the chart of like a little candy cane from November 5th to about November 8th or to where we are now. So what's the difference between what's been driving the behavior of one versus the other?
Well, you said it, you nailed it. The bond market managers, the traders, I guess, are just a completely different kettle of fish. Than
more cerebral credibility, maybe?
Yeah, more cerebral credibility. Yes, yes. And you know, I don't know. Maybe Robinhood does trade bonds. I'm sure they are. There's a way to trade bonds on Robinhood. I'm guessing the volume is slightly less than the equity side on those. So, if you look at sort of where was the bottom of the 10-year, it was effectively the FOMC meeting September 16th, 17th. Right there, we were 360 on the 10-year. They cut the 50 basis points. Well, obviously that's economically stimulative. Okay. So from there, the bond market said, wait a minute. Okay. We're bringing rates. We're accommodating a very good economy. Okay. So that's going to be good for the equity side. Okay. And that could lead to obviously more economic growth. And it could, I'm not saying it will, could create, you know, a more not inflation like we had, but it could prevent the inflation that has been falling at a fairly steady, rapid pace to slow that pace of decline. Okay. And that's when it initially started. That, and you can see it right there. That's the bottom. And then it just kind of made a beeline to about 4.25 into the election. And you can almost look at the probability of Trump coming in and the correlation on the 10-year. You can see it wobbled here and there, but for the most part, as he became more likely that he was going to win the election, you know, it started to sell off. And then once he won the election, it moved again. It actually kind of, it hasn't moved all that much. I mean, the day he won the election, I believe we were sitting at 429, 430 on the 10-year. And it's got a high, it went as high as 448. I believe right now we're sitting at 442. So you're talking about at most a 20 basis point, 18, 19 basis point move from election day to now. That's it. That's all. And it's kind of starting to roll over. So it kind of lets you know the bond market got it right. And the few in the bond market that sold off after the fact, you know, who knows where that came from? That could have just been the retail side. It's anybody's guess. But for the largest part of the bond market, they had priced that in and they'd done a good job of it. So now the equity side's different. I think we were trading about 58, 60 about a week before the election or so. And then the week before the election, that's when we kind of had that pullback. We got to the up like 56.80, 56.90 right through there. Okay. And then it turned around and went the other way before the election day. And then the election day happened and it just absolutely turned around. And we had that nearly 150 point that Wednesday after the election. We had a 150 point day. What you had there that day was absolution. That was absolution from the equity market saying, this is what we wanted. Okay. This is what we priced in, and now it's happened. So there was a night. I mean, if you take 58.50, okay, and it went to basically 6,000, so you're 150 points, okay. The market had priced in a 90% chance of Trump winning, and they got it right. So you know, and then when it actually when he won, and there was that blow off spike, that was the market saying, hey. This is what we want. This is what we thought was going to happen. This is what we wanted to happen. Okay. Now, I was asked this from other clients too. So if Harris would have won, the market would have crashed. Right? And I said, of course, no, that wouldn't have happened. market would not have crashed if Kamala Harris had won. It probably wouldn't have had the blow-off spike that it had. It might have pulled back a little bit, but it would have, you know, it would have been fairly reasonable. Okay, and back to our thesis of we think the market's going to have a higher rate of return with Trump because of the lower corporate tax and lower regulation. Now this Department of Government Efficiency, okay, but it's also probably going to be a little bit more volatile based on the geopolitics with him, you know, in regards to China, Russia, or whomever. Yeah, So there's going to be opportunity that's provided in the equity market and the bond market with Trump, but there's going to be some rough days like the one we're having now, where the NASDAQ is down, you know, almost 500 points, 2.5%. So, but again, that same NASDAQ was a very large beneficiary on Wednesday, November 6th, when it was up, you know, well over 500 points, you know, nearly 600 points that day. So this could be, you know, just kind of a consolidation period. It's a digestion period, which I don't think will last very long. We'll likely have a consolidation in through Thanksgiving, maybe in the beginning of December, and we'll have another local bottom, right? Yeah. That's a really strange phrase, local bottom. Okay. We'll never use that phrase ever again, ever in the history of
We've already used sloppy bottoms. So
yeah, so we'll probably have a local sloppy bottom sometime after Thanksgiving.
That sounds like a dive bar in a college town, if I've ever heard
of one. Well, I mean, after big Thanksgiving dinner, don't we all have sloppy bottoms?
That's true.
Yeah. So and we'll probably see it turn around and head the other way and, you know, finish at record highs for the year. 50% of markets or 50% of market highs are in the month of December. So we expect this is the perfect year for it too. There might actually be a sell-off in January. Again, just selling your taxes for the following year, so you don't have to realize those gains in 2024. You can realize those gains in 2025. But, you know, again, earnings are strong. I would like to see earnings. I want to wait at least 30 days till after the election before I look at earnings analysts for 2025 and 2026. I want to give them time to really digest, you know, a potentially different corporate, you know, tax regime than what we had before.
At what point do you and your guys get together and take a look at your 2025 year-end projections? And I mean, it's probably a little bit, with only 5-6 weeks left in the year, I don't want to peg you to a year-end projection for this year, because that's only 6 weeks away. Anything can happen short term. But sort of what do you see next 12-13 months from all of this? Or are you still digesting it also? I mean, there's a lot to Trump's a lot to digest. So do you?
Well, it's sort of never stops, right? I'm always in there. We're always looking, and sort of the line, the playing field is always changing. But if we're going to make changes and there's taxable implications, we get really serious on October 1st. You know, we really start to apply the data that we've put together all year long and put them into the portfolios. And then I usually actually make the modifications sometime in December too. But I don't make those modifications actively. I make them inside of the models. And then I make the actual changes to client portfolios usually after the first of the year, in order for taxes, things like that, to be pretty consistent. I don't want to realize a massive gain, you know, that we've had this year in this year, because if I do it, you know, beginning of next year, well, then if I can sometimes do tax loss harvesting if we have a rough year the following year, and I can kind of bring that home a little bit. So there's no sort of black and white answer to that, because it's always kind of going on, and a lot of it depends on the year that we had versus the year that we're going to have and our projections again. And, you know, Our base case at the beginning of the year was 5,350. A bull case was 5,600. And our caveat was, well, if Trump gets in, this thing could plop over 6,000. And it might do by the end of the year, 6,100. So, and Trump got in.
Well, we touched it. November 11th.
6,017. So I would say a good year end is going to be 6,150 this year and 7,000 for next year. And 2026, probably around 7,000. It's a midterm year, and midterm years are usually not very great. And I think we're going to pull a lot. This is me really looking into the crystal ball and using historical models as precedent, where, you know, based on what the current earnings are and what the earnings forecasts are. But I think we're going to pull a lot of gains forward 2025. And I think 2026 will probably be sort of a digestion year. That'd be my guess. But, you know, who knows? Anything can happen. We had a good earnings season, right? Earnings season is pretty much down. 93% of the companies have reported. 77% are beating estimates by a median of, you know, 6%. So it's strong. Economy's strong. What could derail it is obviously yields continuing to spike without the economic growth to overcome it. So we did have, you know, some not cold, not hot, lukewarm inflation numbers this week. We had CPI come in at 0.3 on a 0.3 consensus. So analysts are starting to expect a little bit more, you know, price pressure. PPI came in yesterday at 0.3 on a 0.2 consensus. Now, if you strip out shelter and auto insurance, inflation's at 1.4% annualized. Annualized, so you take the number, you take that month over month number, and you strip those, just those two components out, it annualizes out to 1.4. So, you know, auto insurance is really starting to take a nosedive, right? So we think that will cool off, but there's other components that could kind of take back off as far as materials, industrials, things like that. So it remains to be seen. You know, we're in a new environment. We have to be able to be flexible. And you know, again, we invest in the market that we have, not the market that we want. However, for lots of us, this is also the market that we want. This is a good market, good economy, good business regulation regime.
Yeah, there's a lot to like at this point. I mean, if you're, the only thing that you can kind of not be comfortable with, and even this has a huge caveat itself. And I mean, valuations are a little high, a little rich, but not for all the things that you're describing. You know what I mean? Like, you can say that Patrick Mahomes has a really rich contract, but there's a lot of reasons that he's worth that also, right? So, I mean, there's the market that we have right now has a lot to be enthusiastic about. So,
well, you know, here's the thing. If we're trading at 21 and a half times forward, but we're growing by, you know, 13, 14, 50% annualized, okay, we're still sitting at a 1.6 ratio. So the valuations don't bother me. The growth metric is what I really care about as it relates to that multiple. That's where it has to start. So looking at a valuation as all by itself can be a mistake. Okay. Now, if you have a company that, you know, has historically grown by 5 or 10% or something like 5% a year, and, you know, it gets shoots to a multiple of 20 times because everyone's just buying, but they haven't released any guidance that would increase their earnings growth by more than 5%. All of a sudden we have a 4x ratio. Yeah, that's a bad idea. But we still see these earnings growth strong. And that's, again, why I'm waiting at least, you know, 30, probably 60 days till we really see the analysts come back with their new earnings estimates to see what that looks like under corporate tax policy that's not going to sunset in 2025, which a lot of them thought they would. In fact, it could go the other way.
Yeah. Cool stuff, man. Well, you are just doing tons to enhance your cerebral credibility on this show. So I appreciate you sharing your wisdom as always. And as always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. Neither Matt nor I know anything about your financial circumstances, so this is not financial or investment advice. But if you would like to have a conversation with a cerebral, credible advisor, Matt Dahl and his team can be reached at 702-655-8300 or head over to intelligentinvestment.com. All the links to all that kind of stuff will be in the description. And if you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple or Spotify, like us, follow us, share us. We have a heck of a lot of fun on this show, and it'd be a lot more fun if more people were watching. So share the love. Get us out there.
Share the love.
Pleasure as always, man. So we've got a little bit of a break here coming up again because we were talking yesterday. We've only got next week you're out. 2 weeks from now is actually Thanksgiving Friday. So we're not sure when we'll be back, but we will be back.
We will be back. We'll be back.
All right, brother. Enjoyed it. Good to see you.